We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, we just have some housekeeping items to start with. We have some new staff with us, and I'd like for them to give introductions, although Kaylin's not going to be with us too much longer. But while she's here, I want you to get to know who she is, so in case you ever have issues, she's another point person that you can go to. So, Kaylin, if you can introduce yourself.
Kaylin Schroeder, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Where are you from?
I'm from Welch, Minnesota.
Yeah. And where are you going?
School. Prefer not to say.
We'll give you grief later. I didn't mean to make you blush.
Okay.
We also have new pages for the committee. Can you guys introduce yourself? Tell us where you're from, what college you went to.
I'm Emmett. I'm from Winona, Minnesota. And just graduated from Yale and moved back to Minneapolis.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thanks for being with us, guys. With that, folks, in your packet, we have a couple things. Do we have minutes that we have to approve today? All right, let's take care of those. We have got the minutes for November 1st, 2017. If Representative Detmer wants to move those at all.
I move them.
Representative Detmer, I move them. The November 1st, 2017 for approval. All those in favor of the November 1st minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Okay, with that, members, we have the Legislative Auditor's Office with us today to give us a report. This was part of our omnibus bill, and it's been an ongoing issue that we've been examining here in State Government Finance on the issue of the gain-sharing program that was established in 2011. And with that, Mr. Nobles, if you could introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Joel Alter, and he'll be making the presentation. Madam Chair and members, it's good to be back with you. We really appreciate the work of this committee and your attention to our work. So I thought I would just start, Madam Chair, very briefly, just to kind of give you an overview of some of the things that are going on in the Office of the Legislative Auditor that may be relevant to this committee. First, since we were last together, I have a new deputy legislative auditor for the Financial Audit Division. Cecile Furkel, after many years, retired. And I appointed Chris Boozy, who some of you know, and I believe Chris is in the audience, from his work at Minute. But what you may not know is that before he went over to the other side, meaning the executive branch, he actually worked at the Office of Legislative Auditor for about 19 years, and he was really an important part of our organization, and so it's great to have him back. And at some point, Madam Chair, you might even want to have Chris before your committee to tell you what his vision is of really making some changes in the Financial Audit Division, but I will just briefly speak for him and say he really wants to make our Financial Audit Division even more relevant to you, the legislature, and particularly your committee, but all the committees. We do have a lot of work that we have to do that is defined by law. For example, we audit the state's financial statements and audit the state's use of federal funds. But we do have some time left over, and we choose financial audits that we conduct, and we want to make sure that those are touching on issues that are of interest and concern to you. And I would also mention, Madam Chair, that we are also very much open to your suggestions, and we certainly have gotten some over the years, for what we call special reviews. And we call them special because you suggest them. Not really. We call them special because...
It's a little too early for this thing.
We call them special because we really have kind of a year-round schedule of work for our Financial Audit Division, and then, of course, all of the topics that are given to us by the Legislative Audit Commission. But we know that other things are going to come up that are of concern to you, or even things that we notice in the media that are of concern to us. And when we think we need to do something, we call that a special review. And currently, Madam Chair, I'll just mention that we have several special reviews in process that may be of interest to you. Mr. Alter has been working on a number of them. In fact, we do so many of these now that I kind of took Mr. Alter out of the Program Evaluation Division and made him director of our special reviews. So he has been working also on a special review of data availability that you want and need, I think, to assess the fiscal impact of the federal refugee resettlement program. And that report will be coming out in a while, and it will, I know, be of interest to members. We also are finishing up a special review of sexual misconduct policies and practices at the University of Minnesota. I know that was a matter of concern to you, Madam Chair. We are also conducting an investigation, a special review of concerns that Representative Fenton has had, and that is something that I think most of you are aware of, and that is an investigation that the Department of Commerce did of Safelite Insurance Company. And so we are currently looking at some issues related to that. We're also finishing up a special review of the transfer of the State Historic Preservation Office from the Historical Society to the Department of Administration, and I'm actually working on that one and hope to have it out in a week or so. We also are starting some of our preliminary work on another project that I know is of concern to many legislators, and that is the use of fetal tissue in research at the University of Minnesota. And there are others, Madam Chair, that we are certainly giving serious consideration to. There are some that you, I know, are interested in that we have not been able to get to yet, but we keep them on the list, and we try to work our way through that and get to them as quickly as we can. So unless you have questions of me, Madam Chair, I think I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Alter.
Mr. Nobles, I just want to say, I don't know if I'm sure I probably speak for the members here today. We do appreciate all the work that you guys do and the timeliness of the reviews that you do in particular, because these are all issues that we get outreach from our constituents on, and so it's helpful to know that we can say we know at least at this point the legislative auditor is looking at it, and it's always a useful tool, the information that you guys provide. So appreciate
Madam
that.
Chair, if I could just pull back from Mr. Alter once, because I know that there are a couple of other things that are interest to this committee in particular. First, we've already completed a review, and my understanding is we're going to be presenting it to you in the near future, and that is a review we did of the state auditor's audits of counties. And we also have looked at and continue to look at something that unfortunately read about on the front page almost every day, and that is Menlars. We are going to conduct a deep audit of Menlars, particularly the financial transactions that have occurred. But we're also going to do some evaluation work to find out even more precisely and deeply what went wrong. So, Madam Chair, I could go on with other things we're working on, but we're here to talk about the gain-sharing program, so I'll turn it over to Mr. Alter.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Mr. Alter, if you can please introduce yourself and state your who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Joel Alter. I'm the Director of Special Reviews for the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And before I launch into the report and the findings, I think it's important to take a moment to say a few words of background about this topic of gain sharing. What exactly do we mean when we use the term gain sharing? And I think one way to think about it is thinking about something that's kind of old and familiar, which is the employee suggestion box. In the old days, an office might have a shoebox with a slit on the top of it, and employees would slip in a suggestion that the boss might consider. And I think gain sharing adds a twist to that. Gain sharing is more than just anonymously forwarding suggestions for the boss to consider. Gain sharing, the term, suggests that if employees come up with good ideas, and specifically ideas about how to reduce costs or increase profits, that those employees might share in some of the gains that result. And for the gain share legislation that we're going to be talking about today, in state government, the idea is that if a state employee helps the state save money with an idea that that person has, then perhaps that employee should share a portion of the savings. And this is an idea that both the public and the private sectors have experimented with in some form and to various degrees. Minnesota state government has dabbled with it a bit prior to this law. There were laws passed in 1995 and 1998 that directed or authorized limited gain sharing. In each case, the legislation applied to a single agency, and in each of those cases, the law was only on the books for a limited period of time. In 2011, the legislature passed a more ambitious gain-sharing program, and the law said that the MMB commissioner, quote, shall implement, unquote, a bonus compensation program. The law did not limit eligibility to just one state agency or a limited group of agencies. The law said that the awards must be paid from the appropriation to which the cost savings accrued, and elsewhere the law referred to, quote, documented cost savings. The law was amended in 2012 so that the maximum amount of the award would be 10% of the documented savings in the first fiscal year that those savings happened, up to a maximum of $50,000. In this review that we did, we asked two questions. The first question, did MMB comply with the 2011 statutory requirement to implement the state employee gain sharing program? And the second question, how is MMB implementing gain sharing in response to some new directives that the legislature made in 2017? Regarding the first question, we found that MMB did not implement the program that was required by the 2011 law. And let me back up a second to our current inquiry, because way back in 2014, we became aware of this issue to some extent when there was a state employee complaint. There was a state employee in an agency who thought that she had made some suggestions that would save the state a considerable amount of money. She was aware that the legislature had passed the gain-sharing legislation in 2011, and she thought that she might be eligible for the type of bonus that was discussed in that law. So she went to MMB, inquired with them, and she got the same response that ultimately when she came to us, we also got from MMB at that time, which was that there was no gain-sharing program, and specifically that the program had not yet been implemented and would not be implemented in the near future. And I think that's important because what MMB officials today say is that they did implement a type of gain-sharing program in 2012. In fact, what MMB implemented at that time was something that they called the Achievement Awards Program. And that program allowed state agencies to give monetary awards to individual employees whose performance was judged to be outstanding. And I should mention that we did not, as a part of this review, evaluate the merits of the Achievement Awards program, and we didn't look at whether those awards have been given to worthy individuals. But the Achievement Awards program, in our view, is quite different from what's specified in law for the gain-sharing program. In the Achievement Awards program, agencies were not directed by MMB to pay bonuses out of the appropriation from which any cost savings accrued, which is one of the requirements of the gain-sharing law. The MMB policies for the Achievement Awards program do not, and still do not today, mention or reference the gain-sharing statute, even though they mention other statutes. In addition, the MMB policy on Achievement Awards does not specifically mention cost savings, nor does it provide guidelines for documentation. I should also mention that in the course of our review, we looked at a number of state agencies' own policies for achievement awards. So MMB has kind of an umbrella policy, and then individual agencies that participate in that program develop their own. And none of those state agency policies reference the gain-sharing statute, and so it was hard for us to see a connection between achievement awards and the gain-sharing statute. So in sum, achievement awards, it was an executive branch initiative for rewarding employees. It was an initiative that was that MMB certainly had authority to undertake, but in our view it was very different from a gain-sharing program that was required by statute, which was to be focused on employee suggestions that resulted in documented cost savings. One other note about MMB's decision to implement the Achievement Award program, we did talk with the person who was the MMB commissioner both at the time that the gain-sharing law passed and at the time that the Achievement Awards program was implemented, and he acknowledged that the agency did not implement a gain-sharing program. He said that at the time, MMB had unresolved questions about how to implement that type of program, and that he chose, or his agency chose instead, to implement Achievement Awards. If we move forward a little, we were talking earlier about the state employee that had come to us and to MMB in 2014. In 2015, the legislature passed legislation that required MMB to prepare a status report on gain sharing. But MMB's report primarily talked about achievement awards and not the cost savings based type of program required by the statute. The law that required that report also asked MMB to suggest any changes that it thought was necessary in the gain-sharing legislation, but there was nothing specific offered in that report. And then in the 2017 legislative session, in this committee, there was a hearing on the topic of gain-sharing. After that committee, two officials from MMB corresponded with individual members of this committee, and in their letters, the MMB officials said that the gain-sharing legislation was unworkable to implement. So the answer to the first question that we looked at, in our view, was pretty clear. In our view, MMB did not comply with the requirements of the gain-sharing law because they did not implement a program that had the components that were specified in the law. MMB implemented a different type of employee reward program, which was within its purview, but it was not based on documented cost savings as required by law. And we think MMB had some opportunities to suggest changes in the legislation, but to our knowledge, it didn't offer any. Now, as you know, during the 2017 legislative session, the legislature amended the gain-sharing law. And it added a statement to the law, and I'll just read a portion of it. A sentence that was added to the legislation said, the program required by this section must be in addition to any existing monetary or non-monetary performance-based recognition programs for state employees, including achievement awards. And so I think clearly the purpose was to try to clarify, if it wasn't clear previously, that this gain-sharing program in statute was different from a program like achievement awards. And I think the legislature tried to underline its intent by including even a statutory subdivision header in the statute that says commissioner must establish program. The legislature also last year required twice yearly reporting by MMB on its implementation efforts. So turning to the second question that we addressed in this report, how is MMB implementing gain sharing in response to the 2017 directives of the legislature? And in short, we concluded that MMB is still not implementing the law. In our discussions with MMB, and I will say I found it surprising to learn that MMB officials do not believe, even with the 2017 amendments, that they are required to implement a cost savings-based gain-sharing program other than achievement awards. They said that the statutory language regarding which type of program they can implement is permissive and that it gives MMB discretion. I think all of you have the report in front of you, but I will just bring to your attention on page 8. We don't always do this, but in this case we put the statutory language right on the page in front of you.
And Mr. Alter, I'm going to pause you a moment and see if our pages could get up on the screens, because I think it would be helpful for the audience to see it on the screens too, because this was the most eye-opening portion that I saw in the report. So you can continue speaking as they try and get it set up, as long as it's not too distracting.
Sure.
If
you want to just use that. Who knew that statues could be so exciting?
You'd be amazed what we do in this committee.
And Madam Chair, are we there yet?
We're not quite there yet.
You can go ahead, Mr. Alter.
All right. What we've done, and you'll see when it comes up on the screen or if you've got it in front of you on page 8, it's key language from the statute, and then we just highlighted either the language that is directive, which is in yellow, or the language that is permissive, which there is one instance of in green. And, yes, there is a place in the statute that does use the term may, but as we read that, we saw it as giving MMB some latitude regarding implementation, but not eliminating the basic requirement for MMB to adopt a gain-sharing program, again, funded by documented cost savings. Everybody have that now? I'm going to move on from that, but we can come back to that if there are questions. We also found that MMB has not taken practical steps to implement a gain-sharing program. There is no application form for an employee who wants to submit a gain-sharing idea. There are no policies or processes that have been adopted by MMB. And so if that employee who came forward in 2014 and had a suggestion and thought that they should qualify for the gain-sharing program, if that person were to try to qualify for a gain-sharing award, I think they would probably hear the same thing, that there is no program in place and there won't be one in the near future. MMB told us that it had no immediate plans to implement gain-sharing, at least not until the legislature addresses MMB's concerns about the feasibility of the gain-sharing law. One of MMB's concerns is the program's cost. So how much does MMB believe that it would cost to implement gain-sharing? That depends partly on which MMB estimates you consult. In August 2017, MMB said that it would cost $1.6 million a year to implement gain-sharing. But when the law originally passed in 2011, MMB prepared a fiscal note, and it said that there would not be large administrative costs, and in fact it said that there would be net cost savings from gain-sharing. I'm not here to present any sort of alternative cost estimate for you. There are certainly a lot of unknowns anytime you implement a new program, and I think it's also worth pointing out that MMB did not receive an appropriation specifically to implement this legislation. But I do think there's reason to ask questions about MMB's cost estimate. The gain-sharing law itself, the language that you see before you in the law, does not specify any specific structure or process for either application or making decisions. And so MMB has had to make some choices there, and they have assumed that it would be a fairly time-consuming process and therefore quite expensive. MMB's estimates assume that there would be around 28,000 hours spent by agencies annually reviewing employee gain-sharing submissions, and that's a lot of time. Furthermore, even though the law's only reporting requirement, again, directs MMB to provide to you twice a year a report on the implementation of gain-sharing, MMB has assumed that other state agencies will spend 6,000 hours a year annually on reporting. Aside from cost, MMB has expressed some other concerns about gain-sharing, and they can certainly speak to these, but let me just highlight them. That it's difficult for public agencies to calculate cost savings that result from certain actions, that it can be inappropriate to rely on financial rewards as a motivator of employees, that no other states offer bonuses as large as the maximum award authorized in Minnesota law, and that there is potential for fraud in the program. We don't agree with all of MMB's critiques. For example, there are some other states that do have gain-sharing bonuses that can be as large as the ones authorized in Minnesota. And we think that research literature does suggest that financial rewards can be a motivating force. I think that MMB does raise some legitimate questions. Yes, it is sometimes very difficult to estimate the likely savings in public programs that would result from a change. And we do agree. We're in the fraud investigation business in our office, and we agree wholeheartedly that we need to take whatever steps are necessary to ensure that fraud doesn't occur. And so I think these are legitimate issues, but I also think they're solvable issues. If there truly is such difficulty estimating what savings might result from an action that an agency takes, maybe it will simply not be possible to have documented cost savings, and maybe that project won't be eligible for an award. So if the cost savings simply aren't measurable, maybe there shouldn't be an award. And, again, we certainly agree that fraud is an important issue, and we think MMB and agencies in implementing this law should give good attention to that, to do whatever is necessary to prevent fraud, and that's a legitimate concern. And that's true of any program that the state implements. Finally, let me address two other issues in the report, and one is just addressing something in the response to the report by MMB. In the response to the report, which in your report, it follows, we've got our report, MMB has a letter, and then they also wanted to have their prior reports on gain sharing, and so those are at the end. So the commissioner's letter is kind of in the middle. But in that response, MMB said that our report, quote, advocates for a new and separate gain sharing program. And the truth is, we're not advocates for or against the concept of gain sharing. As we say in the report, we don't know whether this, whether a gain sharing program would result in significant cost savings or whether it would prove feasible to implement. What we are advocates for is following the law. And very simply, we think MMB has an obligation to implement a program that is consistent with the law passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And if there are problems that arise in implementing it, there are going to be those two reports that MMB has to come to you with every year, and they can certainly bring those issues to your attention. One other issue that I want to address because it relates to a recommendation in the report. There is, on the one hand, the gain-sharing statute in Chapter 16A of the Minnesota Statutes, but then there are also other employee compensation provisions in Chapter 43A of statutes, and I think it's important for legislators to consider the relationship between those provisions. For example, I mentioned that we've got this cap in the gain-sharing law that an award can't be more than $50,000. But would it be possible for an individual bargaining unit to, in its negotiated contract, to cap gain-sharing awards at something much less than that? We put that question to your staff in the House Research Department, the legal staff there, and they said it's a fair question and one that is not easily resolved by the explicit language that is currently in statute. And that's why we highlighted it. We recommend that the legislature give some thought to that and clarify the relationship between both the specific provisions in the gain-sharing statute and the more general provisions regarding employee compensation that appear elsewhere in statute. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to stop there and see if there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Members, what we're going to do at this point is we're going to have MMB come up, and they can present their response to the OLA report. And then after that, we're going to go through questions. So I asked Mr. Nobles and Mr. Alter to stay close to the table, and if Mr. Hallstrom will join us and introduce yourself for the record and state who you represent, and welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eric Hallstrom. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk about the work that we are doing on the subject of gain sharing and to address questions that the committee might have on the OLA's recent report on the same. Minnesota's executive branch employees, and I will be brief in my opening remarks so we can get to the questions, I'm sure, that you have. Minnesota's executive branch employees do important work providing Minnesotans with the services that they expect from their state government. And as previous testifiers have mentioned, since 2012, the executive branch has had an employee achievement awards program in place to foster a culture of high performance and to provide recognition for employee achievements. Last year, Minnesota Statute 16A.90 was amended to require MMB to create a new standalone employee achievement award program built on the gain sharing or profit sharing, sometimes it's referred to, model. And I want to assure you that we continue our efforts to implement that program, and which should be clear, I think, from the agency's most recent report, the August 2017 report to the legislature. However, as you'll also note from those reports, there are numerous obstacles that we have identified to implementation, and the two most prominent issues that I would highlight today that make it difficult to deploy, I guess I would say, a new program in completion would be the language of the statute as it currently exists and some the resources to implement the program. You know, as the agency responsible for both the budget and providing human resources services to a large state workforce, MMB is not rushed into creating a new program that could be potentially risky or financially questionable. Rather, we focused on research and study with the goal of identifying a path forward to implement this new requirement in a responsible and meaningful way. So I want to be clear about the work that is ongoing. The 2017 report was our first run at the research that we've done. We continue to do that research, and I'd be happy to speak to that in more detail, or Emily Leffolds, who works in our office, has also done a lot of the on-the-ground. So if there's detailed questions, I would ask her to provide some answers if we can do that. All state agencies are required to comply with a system of internal controls that protects the public's assets, limits waste, fraud, and abuse. And as the commissioner, it is actually the commissioner of MMB who is responsible for developing and implementing that system. And in the absence of resources for a standalone program built on this profit sharing, which is a data-driven, metrics-based approach to tying awards to specific cost savings, it would be impossible or very challenging to stand up a statewide program that could meet the expectations around our internal controls program. But we continue to study academic research. We've been engaging with experts. We've been discussing this with states that have both active and eliminated programs, gain-sharing programs, such as California, that was referenced in the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. And we will continue to do that to determine the way forward on achieving a functional and robust gain-sharing program built on that profit-sharing model. It is our intention to provide the legislature with another report. It would outline the additional work, the additional research, and the additional findings. And at that time, we will also, I think, be able to provide maybe more, some more additional or precise legislative suggestions for legislative language. As always, we're available to work with members of this committee on improving the service we provide to the state and how better to support our state employees. We have provided input on the gain sharing program in the 2015 report, as well as the 2017 report, and engaging with this committee in testimony last year, and as well as some of the communications directly with legislators. And we remain ready and willing to meet and work through the concerns that we have raised. So thank you very much for having us here today, and look forward to answering any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hallstrom. Members, I've got Representative Ogle first on my list for questions.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hallstrom, I realize some of the things in the report are quotes or comments by Commissioner Franz, and he's not here, so might be a little bit difficult to say what he said. But I guess my first question is, as I go to page 6 of the report, it says that the MMB commissioner, and there's a little paragraph of what he said, that the achievement awards has been implemented as a way to accomplish the goals of gain sharing in a proven cost-effective way. So my question to you is that that's a nice comment, but the state law said that the commissioner shall establish a program to provide one-time bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce cost of operating state government or for ways of providing better, more efficient state services. So although the achievement awards might be nice, I'm wondering who gets to change state statute, because it seems quite apparent to me that what was done with the achievement awards really had nothing to do with the shall portion of the bill.
Mr. Hallstrom.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Vogel. I think the best way to, I don't have a lot of line of sight into some of the decisions that were made in 2012, but I think that we feel confident that the Achievement Awards program, as implemented, would satisfy the statutory requirements prior to the amendments that this committee made last year. I understand that there's some discussion or consideration about, you know, the shells and the mays in the legislation. The Achievement Awards program is a program that is designed to reward high performance, finding efficiencies in the delivery of state services for cost savings. The MNB's internal policy specifically makes cost savings one of the items that can be highlighted as a justification for such an award. But I wouldn't go so far as to suggest that we implemented the gain-sharing program that every member was hoping for or would have liked us to implement. I think our response and the response that's in the to the legislative auditor's report specifically about that pre-2017 period addresses the question of would the achievement awards be in compliance with the shall portion of that statute, and we maintain that it would.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, when you go down to the bullets on page 3 of what shall be done, it said the award must be paid from the appropriation to which the savings accrued. Where did the money come from?
Mr. Hallstrom.
To pay the awards.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Vogel. As I read the statute, the portions in the bulleted sub 1, 2, and 3 relate to the second paragraph. Within the first paragraph, it says the commissioner shall establish a program that provide. You know, this is the sentence that you read that would provide bonus compensation for providing better or more efficient services. And then it goes on to allow the commissioner to provide a one-time award for a suggestion or involvement in a project that's determined to have resulted in documented savings. So we would think that could be a component of the provision or the achievement awards policy or any program that is established in the shell. And I believe that 1, 2, and 3 below that modify the provision that is permissive.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Mr. Holst. So I guess when I see resulted, that would indicate to me that something actually happened and that there was documented cost savings, and therefore you could save it, pay it out of the appropriation that was made for that particular agency. So again, my question is, where did the money come from? Because how did you prove that it actually resulted, that you proved that there were documented cost savings to be able to pay it?
So,
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Vogel. I think if I understand the question, you're asking how, if there was an award provided based on cost savings, how that would have been documented. I don't believe that a award that has been made under the Achievement Awards, and this is a broad statement, so I reserve the right to amend it if I discover that I'm incorrect, and I will so do. But an award made under the for something like a cost savings was awarded under the permissive portion of the statute. I think that we have the Achievement Awards program would comply with the first sentence in Subdivision 1, the mandatory provision of the statute.
Representative Vogel.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Well, I'm still confused because the first part of this is saying that you're going to develop a program, establish a program, which apparently was the Achievement Award thing, okay, because that's throughout the report. It's substituted and said that's part of it. So you needed to create a program like that, and then the second part goes on to say that the program is going to pay from resulted savings, and I guess my question is, how did you prove the savings? Because it says resulted in documented cost savings. What part of the – I would assume that when you wrote the program that you knew that it had to be consistent with the statute. And if it was going to be consistent with the statute to pay the bonus, you would have had to have in that program, in that a way to document the cost savings. And I guess that's my question. We paid out $11 million based on this thing somehow. And that was my first question going way back when, was if we paid out, at that time it was about $7 million, it was $70 million of savings, where did the money come from to pay for this if indeed we were using this statute synonymously with the award system that was put together.
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vogel, I apologize. I don't think I've been clear. So we would draw a distinction between the requirement in the first sentence of subdivision A and the provisions that relate to the documented savings, the maximum, the percentage-based attachment of the award to the documented savings, having to pay it out of the appropriation with, you know, from a savings that occurs within the same fiscal year. That's separate and distinct from the first sentence, which is the mandatory provision. And the reason I say that is because the first provision allows you to establish an award for providing better services. And obviously you can't document a cost savings just for providing services better. You can provide it. And so the position that we articulated in 2015 and the 2017 report and in response to the legislative auditor's report is that prior to the change last year in the legislation, the achievement award would satisfy the mandatory requirements of the law. We understand that that's not the position that was shared by some of the members of this committee, and the new legislation includes a provision that requires the gain sharing program to be a standalone and separate from the achievement awards program. So I don't mean to be difficult, and I want to make sure that you understand the reasoning there. But so I think to the question you specifically asked, where would the achievement awards be paid from? My knowledge at MMB, that would come out of the compensation budget at the agency, not out of a particular program.
But Mr. Hallstrom, if you look at the language, it says on the last sentence of the paragraph A, before authorizing awards under this section, the commissioner shall establish guidelines for the program, including but not limited to items 1, 2, and 3. That's not permissive language. That is a requirement of shall. And you have failed to do that. With that being said, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, moving on, I had a couple of other questions. On page 11, we talk about fiscal notes, and we've obviously got somewhat of an ongoing discussion on fiscal notes right now for how they're prepared. And I guess this leads me to wonder why a fiscal note would have been prepared in 2011 with an estimated savings, and now here we are 6 years later after not following the statute, saying that if we're going to do this, it's going to cost well over $1 million a year. So from projected savings, which was done by the same office of MMB, to projected expenditure to try to save money wouldn't make any sense. But how does a fiscal note vary that much?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. And Representative Vogel, I think that, again, I can't speak to the particular analytical approach that was taken in 2011 in response to, I think it was H.R. 192 that was a broad bill that gain sharing would have been, was one component of. There's only a few sentences in the discussion in that, in the fiscal note itself, where it does identify the fact that there would be a requirement for at least a few full-time employees to administer the program. But I think the answer is the fiscal note in 2011 was talking about the program that was ultimately implemented, and I think the fiscal note in 2017 or last year before the most recent update to the legislation assumes that we would be implementing a standalone, data-driven, metrics-based program that would have a pretty substantial fiscal analysis involved in every single proposal. And that is what we have seen as we've discussed this with states like California. They have a fairly large office. They have, I think on some instances, they would have programs that are proposals that take 6 to 8 years before they can realize and document savings. That is an ongoing cost of administration, not to mention the fact that you have to have staff at every agency who can devote some time, maybe not all of a full-time employee's time, but a substantial portion of time to evaluating those proposals as they're coming through. So we would consider this, you know, it's a little bit like doing fiscal note work kind of ongoing on a particular proposal to document those savings. At least that's what we have heard from the states that we've been able to speak to so far.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and the reason I brought that up is the is having confidence in fiscal notes, because I did read in here that as I read this through, it seemed that the fiscal note wasn't prepared relative to the legislation, the statute itself, as we've already discussed, but indeed what was going to happen. And therefore, the reason I was questioning this, Madam Chair, is because we need to have confidence in fiscal notes, and if they're not going to follow the statute because somebody doesn't want to follow the statute, then what good is the fiscal note? And if I could, just one more thing. I was really impressed with the report and the thoroughness of the way this is going to be done, especially coming up. I can see where it would take, I'm not sure if it takes 37,000 hours, but I can see where it takes a lot of hours to put something together like this. And I know you don't have it along with you, but what I would appreciate, knowing how diligent the MMB is in putting these programs together, if you could provide us with the documentation, the work papers or whatever they are, for the different programs that have already been put together, not the least of which is the Achievement Awards. But also, as I went through here, I noticed that there is rewards for, and again, it gets to be how you're measuring this, and I would assume that you follow the same thing, because you certainly want to make something more difficult to do the gain sharing than you would for everything else, because I'm sure you want to be fair. And therefore, when you look at the defining, it says there's rewards to encourage exceptional employee performance. And I'd like to see the documentation to make sure that it's consistent with what we're going to have to spend 37 hours doing for GainShare, that it was also done for that program, as well as, I think there was one other one here, unanticipated innovation. So I would assume that there's documentation that would be similar. And, Madam Chair, I would appreciate if we could get a copy of how that was put together to just see how it's worked out, because if we're going to invest 37,000 hours in this, it would be nice to see how those others were done, because I'm assuming that they were done with the same care and diligence.
And Mr. Hallstrom, if you send that to John Holdquist, he'll be able to distribute that to the committee, if you would, please.
Certainly.
All right. I've got Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have questions for both MMB and the OLA, so if maybe somebody from the OLA could come up to the table. Mr. Nobles. Thank you so much. So, Mr. Nobles, thanks for coming. Thanks for doing this report. I just wanted to make sure that I understood the output of the report that you did on this said that essentially MMB has ignored the law. Is that a safe statement to say?
Mr. Nobles, or Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, members, I think we clearly said they did not implement the law.
Okay. And could we infer through...
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just getting back. Madam Chair, would it be safe to say that not implementing it is ignoring the law?
Mr. Nobles?
I think that you make a fair statement, Representative Nash.
Madam Chair.
Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Nobles, I guess the first question, in a situation like this, when you've found something that is really an egregious breach of the law, is there a remedy that you can pursue? Do you refer things maybe to a county attorney for a prosecution? Has that ever happened in the past?
Mr. Nobles.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, members, we are obligated under the law, 3.975, to refer to a county attorney whenever we find that money has been misused, been used for a purpose other than that for which it was appropriated. And we do make those referrals to county attorneys.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we first went down this road last year, we had asked for samples or a full accounting of who all has received these awards. And to date, our committee has only gotten this very small snippet of information on the various awards. One, for MMB, I'm curious as to why we haven't gotten that yet. And if you'd like to answer that, I'd appreciate it before we move on.
Mr. Hallstrom, can you get us the report of more details of everybody that's received an achievement award?
Yes, I do apologize, Representative Nash. I'm not sure where we left that conversation after last session, and so if we have additional information that we need to provide for you, we will absolutely pull that together. I think the examples we gave you were the MMB award examples, because those were the easiest for us to pull quickly while we were working with you last session, but we certainly can do more.
Sure.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I remember correctly, and I talked to Mr. Holtquist beforehand, we had submitted a request for a full accounting of those. But I'll now direct part of that question to the auditor.
Representative Nash, let me pause you for a second. I just want to make sure it's clear that we're not asking for just samples. We're asking for the full amount. So not just for MMB, for every single agency that has been doing these achievement awards, which is not at all what the gain sharing program is. So with that, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was on the runway.
I'm sorry.
You just helped me take off earlier. Mr. Nobles, you probably sifted through a lot of the awards that have been paid out, because I know how diligent you are, and you've seen greater details than we got from MMB. The one question that I have, because it's another issue that you're going to be looking into and has been very timely, have there been, I guess they're being called achievement awards when they should be being called gain sharing awards, but were there achievement awards given to anybody that's working on the MNLARS project?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, actually a staff person asked that yesterday, and I think we would have to give you a complete answer, we'd have to know everybody who was working on the MNLARS project. I was aware of a couple of names. I looked them up. There were no achievement awards over the 2011 to 2017 period that we looked at, but that doesn't mean that there might not be other staff in either MNIT or the Department of Public Safety who worked on that project. I don't know at this point.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Holtrum, would you agree that the OLA does a good job, fair, unbiased, pretty straightforward approach, and that the reports that we get from them are things that we should be doing?
Well, Representative Nash, I think that's kind of, is there a different way?
I'll just go down this road. Is there a reason that has been discussed internal to MMB that you've essentially ignored the law?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I would disagree wholeheartedly that we've ignored the law. We've spent an enormous amount of time looking at the law, working on the research, and attempting to find a path forward. As I said at the beginning of my testimony, our intent is to raise to the legislature the issues that we think would be necessary, the changes that would be necessary to ensure that we can comply with both the gain sharing law requirements as well as our other requirements around responsible administration of public resources. So I take issue with the suggestion that we ignored the law. I understand that there's not a gain-sharing program as envisioned by the law in place right now. I'm not sure that even if we were moving with all due speed, with resources, and we're fully staffed up, that we would have a program deployed at this moment. So I think it's always going to take some time to implement and develop a full-fledged program. This isn't simply writing up a policy. It's actually doing the legwork around building out a full and operational program. And as we as I mentioned at the beginning, there's certain aspects of the statute that make such a program unworkable or at least very challenging to implement, at least in one that would result in achievement or gain-sharing awards, as Mr. Alter mentioned. But also, in the absence of resources, this is very challenging for us to do.
Madam Chair, might I just respond as well? Because I sit here thinking about this, and frankly, this really strikes at the heart of something that's pretty fundamental, and that's separation of powers. You pass the laws, and after the governor signs them, it seems to me the role of the executive branch is to implement them. And the executive branch here seems to be laying out a theory about separation of powers whereby they can decide whether or not they want to implement a law or not. And if you expand that theory to all the laws that you pass, we're in a heap of trouble here. Because implementing a lot of the laws that you pass are is complicated, difficult, challenging. And they may be in laws that the governor doesn't agree with, like the laws you passed changing some of the tax provisions or the teacher licensure provisions. The governor has said quite forcefully that he doesn't agree with those. But does the Commissioner of Revenue have the prerogative to not implement them because they're challenging and difficult? Or they don't agree with them? I mean, this is about a relatively small program, Gainshare, but it's about a very fundamental principle. And it alarms me, frankly, that the administration puts this theory out because it really strikes at the heart of something that's very important.
I think, Mr. Nobles, I know I share that sentiment. This is something that makes my eyebrows go up into my hairline, and I am very worried about this. I consider not only this is an affront to the legislative body, which, by the way, this law in 2011 passed the House with 105 votes to 17. So we're not talking about this being a one-sided political equation. Not only that, it was signed into law by Governor Dayton. So not only is this agency thwarting the entire legislative body, but you're also saying to the governor, we're not going to implement a law that you signed into law. And that is a serious problem. With that, Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we're on the same page. I'm surprised that the law has been ignored. And you can say that you disagree with the characterization. It's not my characterization. It's here in the report. The report says that you ignore the law. We pass laws. All Minnesotans are subject to them. And my question is, why is the administration considering itself not subject to the laws that we've just passed in 2011? And how long of a runway do you need to comply with the law?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, I think the best way to answer that is that we are taking the time to present to you a pathway forward that allows us to comply with this law as well as the other laws that apply to the Commissioner of Management and Budget. And there are a number of which I spoke earlier about internal controls. If we're in a position where we must ignore one set of rules to implement another set of legislative enactments, I don't know that that's any better.
Well, Madam Chair, this will be my last. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm frustrated that a law passed in 2011 seems to be on a Minlar's implementation-like calendar that we take forever to implement a law. And I'm just blown away, and I'm sure that many of my colleagues are as well, that a law passed in 2011, before many of us were even elected to this body, is still being ignored, can't be implemented, and is in conflict with your previous fiscal note, and now it's much larger. It seems to me, and I've actually talked about this with several of my colleagues and many of my constituents, that you're just ignoring it because you don't like it. And I'm just frustrated, and I think that I'm not alone in that. So, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Alter. One thing that you referenced early on, and I also saw in the report, was gain-sharing programs were put in effect for the Department of Employee Relations in 95 and the Met Council in 98. But those gain-sharings were repealed. Can you give some insight as to why they didn't remain in effect for those particular agencies?
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, the 1995 legislation, which affected only the Department of Employee Relations, my understanding of that is it was not codified. And so essentially it remained in effect for 2 years, There was a requirement that the Department of Employee Relations issue a report, which they did. And then the legislature, if they wanted to continue that, would have had to have acted affirmatively to continue the program, and they didn't. Then in 1998, the legislature passed a law, and it was not, if I remember correctly, it authorized the Metropolitan Council to, as opposed to directing the council, it authorized the Metropolitan Council to implement a gain-sharing type program. And we weren't able to find any public reports that kind of described the outcomes of those efforts. We did talk to some people at the council, but we're getting close to 20 years since that was implemented, and didn't find a lot of sharp memories about it. Some people did say that, you know, it was at times divisive in terms of there were some people within the organization that didn't think it was a positive thing. And so I don't know exactly why the legislature, they did have to repeal that, and it was repealed in 2003. But because we just don't have any final reports or anything regarding the legislative action, I'm not exactly sure what was behind that.
Representative Johnson.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess we don't really know much from those two experiences to how well it worked, is kind of what you're saying.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Alter.
I didn't learn a lot from either the report that Employee Relations did, and again, memories are fairly dim at the council.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then to Mr. Hallstrom. I see that you characterize the gain-sharing program as an unfunded mandate requiring you to do something but not providing the funding to get it done. If the funding was provided, would the MMB be more willing, or would they then move forward on this, or would you still go back to the language in the statute where it has that one statement of may?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, as I said earlier, with adequate funding and I believe some minor changes to the law, we would be in a strong position to move forward with not only developing and implementing, but having a fully deployed system. So resources are one of the linchpins to being able to devote time and effort to a project like this and ensure that it is implemented in a way that's consistent with the other laws around fiscal management and employee relations. Where there will be issues around, we would likely need to bargain with our employee bargaining units over, because this gets at terms and conditions of employment. So there would certainly be some additional work, and that's why in our fiscal note you'll see that the startup costs have additional FTE time that we would not see continue on, because once you've established a memorandum of understanding or a new contractual provision, that would be kind of a one-time or sunk cost, like much of the initial development. There would still be some issues around the language in the statute right now. We have concerns about the ability to both discern and document savings within a fiscal year and still pay the award out of those savings. Oftentimes you can't document savings until the close of the fiscal year, where it's too late to actually make additional payments out of those funds. So we think there's a few places where we could make the statute more workable. But to the core of your question, additional resources to support this program are an important step in moving it forward.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one last comment then. Look, it seems to me that this is a very solvable issue on a program that's not major to the state, and it's something that can be resolved. And I would note that Mr. Noble's comments on basic government principles, I concur with that. I know, and after this next election, we could easily have a Republican governor and a Democratic House, and if we pass, you know, legislation here, obviously I want to see it implemented. So I would encourage some movement from MMB or whatever to, get done what needs to be done as far as what the directives are of this body. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I just want to go back on a couple of things, though. As I read in the report, Mr. Alter, in the version that was done in, I believe, 1997, that was the Department of Employee Relations, they actually did estimate that their cost savings of implementing that program just over a two-year period is $288,000. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. What the report didn't tell is what payouts there were to employees. So kind of the gain-sharing part of it was unclear from that report, but you're correct.
Okay. And then also I just want to go back, and this is for your benefit, Mr. Hallstrom. I know that you said that you weren't part of the agency at this time. But in the fiscal note from 2011 on this bill, which is the language that we have, so the only thing that we changed that is new to this is the portion that talks about that you have to give a report to us twice a year. That's in essence kind of the only change. Otherwise, the nuts and bolts of the gain-sharing program itself has been in effect since 2011. So that's 7 years that the department has had to actually implement the law that the legislature passed, the governor signed into law, 7 years. So you've had plenty of time to do that. And in the gain-sharing program, it says on the fiscal note, it says the savings are estimated at $1 million per year, of which 10% will be returned to the staff persons responsible for the suggestions. This language is no different. It's the actual language that's in statute from 2011. And the department at that time said that we're going to have an estimated savings of $1 million per year. And then it says the staff will be paid an average of $55,000 per year. The net savings overall is a little over $600,000, and that's on the fiscal note. And getting back to Representative Vogel's point, if we can't trust the fiscal notes from 2011, why should we trust any fiscal note from 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and going forward? Then it just says that any fiscal note that you guys put out is bunk. And I have a little concern, too, that when we're talking about this, agencies on a regular basis give us estimates of cost savings. I was just in the tax committee earlier today, and we were talking about cost savings on different measures that we have within the state on tax policy. So that is something that the agencies themselves do on a regular basis. It's not a new task. It's something that you are required to do. You certainly do it for every fiscal note that you have. So we're not asking you to do new duties at all. So when I look at this, my cynical hat comes on, and I say, oh, goodness, they just don't like this. So now all of a sudden the fiscal note gets inflated to costing $1.6 million. And I don't think that's good for any of us here. I think that we want to have a good trusting relationship between the legislative body and the executive branch. And when the fiscal notes change this drastically within a seven-year period with the same administration, I think that's really problematic. So with that, we got a couple more members. We got Representative Quam and then Representative Ugulam. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I want there was a statement early on by the testifier for MMB that said shalls and mays. I'd like the testifier to show me the second may in the language other than what the one we've covered.
Sure. Mr. Hallstrom, and then members, for your reference, if you look on page 8 of the OLA report, they're all highlighted for us.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Quam, I'm not sure if I misspoke. I was, I guess, drawing the contrast between there's a shall in the first sentence and a may in the second sentence, and was speaking to the distinction between those two portions of the statute.
Madam Quam. Chair, thank you for that clarification of the misspeak, because there is a difference between singular and plural. And one was definitely plural. The other was singular. I'd like staff to let me know, because the excuse was used, the bargaining unit negotiated in contract language to change what the parameters of payment were, where in statute is allowed for a bargaining unit to ignore state law and statute and do whatever they want in an agreement with an agency.
Mr. Gearing, can you help us out? Can they supersede state law?
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, the standards for what can be included in a bargaining process is all laid out in Chapter 43A. So I'm not familiar with the specific section that you're looking for.
I think maybe we can get an answer later on. I think, in essence, we're asking if the collective bargaining agreements can supersede what we already have in statute. So we'll get that back to you.
Especially statute that has been passed after the that statute.
If I could, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hallstrom?
Now I'm translating a little bit for my colleagues from OLA, but I think the question was about whether you could put a limit that is lower than the maximum limit established in the statute. So under subdivision A1, it sets a maximum award of $50,000. And I think the question is, could in a bargaining agreement you establish for one unit a maximum $5,000 award?
Is that correct?
Madam Chair, discussion brought up the need to understand where a collective bargaining unit can supersede law that's been passed. I'd like to know that for future reference for this committee because it would be useful. Going on to additional, it appears as if 8-year delay has been successful in trying to prevent actually implementing this program. Was it a lack of the management, or is it a lack of having a competent person in your organization to implement a legislated program that is common in the public sector?
Mr. Hallstrom?
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, I think what I would say is that as the legislative auditor's report draws a distinction between the period prior to the change in 2017 and the period after the change in 2017, as we had indicated in the 2015 report, we felt that the Achievement Awards program satisfied the statutory requirement. So I wouldn't say that we were not attempting to effectuate the statutory requirements incumbent upon us at that time. We just felt that we had done that. The statutory change made in 2017 requires that to be a separate program, a standalone or a separate gain-sharing program, separate from any existing public achievement award program. So now we move forward with those efforts at implementation.
Representative Quam?
Thank you. And it may be nice to get a good definition of what cost savings is, because apparently that's also in dispute since it's in a statute. I do want to touch on, there's correspondence back to the chair from MMB in regards to the SAVI initiative. 2011, another 2011 piece of legislation. In that correspondence, it indicated that there was savings due to activity by the Office of Continuous Improvement. I'm wondering how much money was returned to the general fund from that activity, because that's what the statute said, and I understand the legislative intent, since that was my first piece of legislation that became law.
Mr. Hallstrom.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that for you, but we can certainly obtain that. The Office of Continuous Improvement is an office at the Department of Administration, and although we work closely with them, I would need to just talk to them on particularly about the SAVI program.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like clarification, since they're going to be coming back with information. One, on what was the actual budgetary amount that was returned to the general fund, and then also the composition and the report from the committee that decide how to utilize those funds, because in the statute it's not the commissioner, it's not a single person, it's a entity, a committee or a committee that composed of both administration and staff. So we have the actual workers and administration splitting that committee in order to come up with how to spend that money best to help. It's not just one administrator, moving money around. So with that, I eagerly anticipate further information.
Great. Representative Ugun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions will be directed to Mr. Hallstrom. I really am appalled that this has taken place where the legislature, in a bipartisan effort, a large bipartisan effort, enacts a statute for gain sharing, and then the Office of Management and Budget decides to ignore that, quite simply ignore that. And I think our constituents and our taxpayers need to understand that. And then you come up with your Achievement Awards program. The gain sharing program was legislative intent was to be paid out of cost savings and everything else. So my questions are, in the Achievement Awards program, how are you documenting any cost savings? How are you documenting these awards? How is it determined that people get $1,000, $2,000, or $5,000 bonuses?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Uglum. I don't have the numbers on the top of my head, but the Achievement Awards has a much lower payout than the statutory maximum that is identified in the gain sharing program. So just to start off by indicating that. Every agency, MMB's policy around the Achievement Awards program is an umbrella policy. It sets the parameters for individual agency policies, but individual agencies then put forth a particular set of procedures that are applicable to the employees at their agency. I can speak with some knowledge about MMBs, but not necessarily every agency's. We could pull that together, and I know that not every agency that may have an Achievement Award program under that policy has elected to establish an Achievement Award program under that policy.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Well, really what you're saying is that you don't know what the parameters are for this. You've testified that better service, exceptional employee performance, and things like that are a basis for these awards. Is that subjective?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think it was Commissioner Showalter in 2012 when they established the Achievement Awards program. Talked about the efficacy around financial incentives for employees. So there is a breadth of knowledge of research around achievement awards programs or employee incentive programs, financial incentive programs. And I think I heard earlier the legislative auditor's office suggest that there is some concern about financial incentives for employees as a performance-enhancing measure. I don't want that to be, I don't want the committee to be led to believe that MMB has a concern with providing financial incentives. There's lots and lots of literature that demonstrates that can improve morale, improve performance, and is a good way to recognize excellence. So the Achievement Awards programs is not a cost savings, a program that's built on documented cost savings. It's about high performance of employees. In some instances, those performance, and MMB is one agency that's done this, that has identified a cost saving as a item, you know, where there's a list of things that you could select. It can be sustained performance, maybe taking on additional duties, but also if you have a cost saving proposal. So, you know, that could be, we move to copiers that force you to do double-sided and print in black and white rather than color, and it tracks how much you save. I mean, that is one example of a cost-saving measure that our agency has and can track.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you. Mr. Hallstrom, you're not convincing me, okay? Now, in your employee achievement award activity that is detailed on page 4 and 5 of the legislative auditor's report, I see that the Department of Human Services awarded 610 awards for $686,500 of the taxpayers' money. Now, my question to you is, we know what the performance has been at the Department of Human Services. Are these the very same people that were throwing away the reports and the inspections and things for our elder care abuse that went on? My question is, how can you have 610 people in a department that is under attack, rightfully so? How can you be paying out bonuses of $686,000 based on subjective savings like double-sided copying? How can you do that?
Mr. Hallstrom.
Madam Chair, I'm not as familiar with the particulars of some of the concerns that have been raised about elder care. I do believe that some of those concerns may be related to the Department of Health and not the Department of Human Services. I know the Department of Human Services has been pulled in to do some assist in some of the remediation work there, but I really would be outside of my swim lane to speak with any specificity about the particular recipients of those awards and whether they worked in one of those areas.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lugo.
One final question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but with these awards, how many multiple times have people been awarded monetary compensation with this? Are there individuals that have gotten this award four or five or six times? Do you know that?
Mr. Hallstrom?
Madam Chair, I would be hard-pressed to give you with confidence any sort of number. It's certainly the case that individuals have won an award in more than 1 year. Our MMB's policy would not permit you to win an award more than once in a calendar year or fiscal year. We provide them on a quarterly basis, but you only would receive one in a year. But I can't tell you how many people have won more than one or have been awarded more than one. I certainly that is a knowable fact, though. I can find out for you.
One final question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Hallstrom, just to sum up, the legislature enacted a law in 2011 looking in a very bipartisan manner to reward our very, very good employees at the state of Minnesota through a gain-sharing program with documented cost savings. And to me, looking at now the Achievement Award program, it's a perverted version. There's no documented cost savings, and it certainly looks like the bonuses are very subjective and paid out. If you look at the various agencies involved, some of them could very well be abusing this, where others are minuscule in nature in terms of the amount of money that they're awarding. But the fact, like the legislative auditor mentioned, the fact that your agency has not followed the law, and is making their own law, is very, very disturbing to me. And I know it's very disturbing to all of our constituents, be they Democratic or Republican, because this is the legislature. We represent the people. And I would submit to you that you better go back and talk to your peers at the agency and your management team and have a little introspective about this, because this is very, very serious. We cannot allow it to go on. It's not that we're beating up on you. Well, maybe we are a little bit, but it's deserved. And we have to do better. We can't continue down this road. And we owe it to the people and the people that elected all of us. Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hallstrom, I want to try to bring this into perspective. A lot of the questions that I had have been answered. The one comment that you made is that you can't rush into this. And I think from 2011 is hardly rushing. I think that speaks for itself. But I want to make sure that we're clear that the gain-sharing program that you have here is nothing like the law that you were supposed to do. It just isn't. And when I hear you say that, it kind of reminds me of
when my kids were teenagers, and I would tell them that they had to drive just to town and back, and then they would get a ticket and say, well, you didn't say I couldn't drive 100. You're kind of twisting things around here, and it is irritating. And I think it's one of the reasons why state government in general gets such a bad rap, because people can't trust us. And so here we have this law, and I could go on and on about the money and the different aspects of it, but the bottom line is, and Mr. Nobles kind of stole my thunder there, but that's okay. A law was ignored. A law was ignored, and I think, Madam Chair, we have to deal with it just as soon as possible. And we can wait for reports, I guess, and try to get answers to these smaller questions, but the bottom line is we have to deal with this.
Representative Folsom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the spirit of what the piece of what we're trying to do is make government work better and more efficiently, and that was the point of the gain-sharing program, and I think rightfully so. We've brought up a lot of pieces of frustration and need for accountability, and we've read the report and we've done this, but I don't think any of us want to be here again tackling this problem repeatedly, and we've spent a lot of time going into the depths of the problem and answering questions, but I think to Representative Green's point, do we need answers to the smaller questions, or do we see the scope of the problem and can we start to talk about solutions? And we've spent a very minimal amount of time today actually addressing solutions to this problem. And I would say actually in this committee we actually spend a minimal amount of time addressing solutions, and we do a lot of looking at what's been gone wrong. And so to the point, we have recommendations in front of us from the OLA report, and I just asked Mr. Holstrom again, you touched on some solutions, like how are we not back here again? What's it going to take to not be here again? And so to you, I would ask the question around, you've talked, you know, if you want to speak more to the resources specifically or to the change in statute we need. And then to Mr. Nobles, your point that you brought up that isn't reflected in the recommendations here, that you raised a pretty big question around, you know, their choice to not carry out a law. So I would love to hear your thoughts on, given what you've said today, what do you recommend we do so that we're not here again? Mr. Hallstrom?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Olson, I appreciate the opportunity. Much of our the fiscal note or fiscal analysis of what some of the costs would be around this, around implementing the program, are laid out pretty extensively in the 2017 report we submitted, so I don't want to belabor that. I would point out that even in the 2011 fiscal note, there was an acknowledgement that there's administrative resources that are necessary to implement a program like this, and I just would reiterate that to the committee members that one of the limiting principles that we are currently faced with is the absence of any resources in which to dedicate to this program. I take the committee members' concerns to heart, and I want to reiterate that we have a strong commitment to the same principles that drive, you know, that are underlie the gain sharing program. It's finding efficiencies, delivering services more efficiently and effectively for Minnesotans, as well as finding cost savings and being able to implement those continuous improvement ideas that come from our employees. So we would like nothing more than to be able to reward those innovative ideas of our employees with in a financial way, and we'd like to be able to implement a program that can do that. The place we're at this moment is not because we choose to ignore the statutory requirements. It's because we face obstacles in its implementation, both around resources and, as I said, statutory provisions. It might be more productive if we circulated some suggested legislative changes on paper, but as I mentioned before, The fact that we would have savings are limited to being paid out of the appropriation, and those savings would be have to be accounted for in the first fiscal year that those savings occur, we think is a, makes it challenging to actually implement a program that would produce employee gains or employee awards. I think those are the main things I would highlight here. I know that there's a few other more technical type proposals, but I would be and we will continue to be active and assist in providing some of those recommendations as, that we have.
And before Mr. Noble speaks to the recommendations that the auditor has provided in the report, I will say that we have been actively asking for feedback from MMB on what you would like to have changed. We first started discussing this issue back in 2015, never received any comments back from MMB of what they would like to see changed. In fact, if you go back to the law in 2011, none of these, no concerns were raised about implementing this program. The fiscal note from 2011 also said that the cost would actually net of savings to the state, as I mentioned earlier, rather than this cost of $1.6 million. That being said, if it was truly a problem, every year the agency can come back with a budget request asking for additional funds. Nowhere has that ever happened. There was never a request for even this new amount that MMB has decided is it's going to cost them from the savings that they initially said they'd have, and now the cost that they're saying it's going to be, that never has the agency themselves come forward with that, not in any of their supplemental requests. In fact, in the $4.1 million in new money that they received last year, obviously they haven't taken any of that money to put into this program, even though they know the law requires them to do so. So I just want to make sure that members are fully aware of that as well. With that, Mr. Nobles, Ms. Olson had a question. Representative Olson had a question for you as well.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Olson and members. I'm simply just baffled. I don't understand, as many of you seem to not either, why there is this level of resistance about implementing this law. I mean, we are in and out of state agencies every day who face a lot bigger challenges than implementing this program. I mean, we are over at the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Transportation, Public Safety, big departments with challenging laws to implement, and sometimes without adequate resources to do it. But they simply move forward as best they can and see how it goes and then come back to you and tell you what the challenges are and the resources they need, and it's an ongoing dialogue. But I think, as the chair just said, this dialogue seems to keep going on without any progress in actually moving the program forward. So there's got to be something more in the reason why than the resources or the challenges, because that's almost throughout state government. That's what departments everywhere face. That's what OLA faces. That's what That's just the nature of the work we do. And I can't frankly remember a time when the legislature passed a law and an agency simply didn't implement it. I search my mind. I find a lot of cases where they struggled, where it was a challenge, where they said they didn't have adequate resources, but they moved forward as best they could. And that's what's missing here. So you ask me, how can we not be here? The simple answer is the department moves forward to do the best they can implementing this program and then come back to you and tell you how it's going and what they need. And maybe the program works and maybe it doesn't. But it isn't their prerogative to say, well, we're not even going to try. Mm-hmm. That's not their prerogative. That is not the prerogative of the executive branch. So I just sit here and, you know, we've gone through doing this evaluation, had a lot of conversations with the people at the MMB about this, and we just remain baffled. Why a program, frankly, that could do some good,
has some fundamental flaw in it that to the Department of Management and Budget that they just can't get around, but they also can't quite articulate what it is in a way that makes sense. Because, again, lack of resources, challenges in implementation, that's just the daily work of government. And you move forward in that kind of environment. So,
Representative Olson?
Thank you. I mean, I think, thank you, Madam Chair. That addresses the question. I think then we need to create a space within our committee and continue to work to find the solution. I think that's part of what we're called to do. And I also think sometimes the environment we set up here doesn't allow itself for open reflection and healthy dialogue in a way that really unearths some of the problem when it is seems like it can be very adversarial towards our government agencies. To use the example, I think, you know, someone already talked about raising children. Oftentimes you have to help to get to where the solution is together, but when it's constant barrage, I think it's much more difficult to get to a healthy outcome together. So I also just want us to be mindful of the way we use our community space to really get to solutions that are healthy for our state government, because that's the bottom line, what we all want here, is a better and more efficient government for our people that we serve. And I often don't think the way we set up our conversations here actually helped to get us there. So I also just want us to be mindful of how we go about finding solutions together and holding accountable when we need to be held accountable. Absolutely. But I really do want to see a little bit better version of the way we discuss this and work together to get us where we all want to go, regardless of what side of the aisle we sit on.
Well, and Representative Olson, I understand that you're coming into this from the 2017 session. You weren't here in 2015 when we asked the question to the agency of, give us a report on where this is at. And the agency kind of said, we're not going to do it, and we don't care what you think. So we're building off of that as the initial start. And so I think that you see a built-up of frustration of members that tried to do that and do that outreach and say, okay, let's move on from here, and got a brick wall, basically. Representative O'Driscoll and then Representative Emmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Couple of things. The number 17 comes to mind. That's the number of people who are on this committee. And the number 6 comes to mind. Those are the people who were here in 2011 when we worked on this. So we've got 11 of the 17 members on here who are coming onto the on-ramp of this topic at several different entry points throughout the last seven years. And maybe, you know, the legislature's got the seven-year itch on this because they haven't been able to get their issues resolved with the matter. But to borrow an expression that the chair used, I heard a couple of things today from Mr. Hallstrom that caused my eyebrows to open to my hairline, and my hairline's a lot further back than the chair's hairline is. So these things really did catch my attention. One is I was just kind of miffed and stunned by the fact that we're hiding behind the fact that we may have to have a collective bargaining agreement to pay people benefits that are over and above and outside. Every public employer that I've ever negotiated contracts with, the unions had no problem if there was extra compensation that was not given, or excuse me, that was given, that was outside of the collective bargaining agreement. So I find that one to be kind of a Swiss cheese response and answer for the committee. Secondly, you know, we're hearing what I'll call platitudes today. Oh, you know, well, we need to look at this. It's not able to be done. If this is 2011, when we pass this, and this is 2012, and we're back saying, hey, you know what, let's look at it. There's some problems on here. But it's not. It's 7 years after this law has been passed into place. And here we are asking the same things. And I don't want to impugn the motives of the administration and MMB, but will we, and how do we hold you accountable to get results back so that we can take care of something that the governor signed in his very first term, in his very first year, his very first budget cycle with the legislature, and again, 105 people in the House supporting this and like numbers in the Senate. It seems to me to be a no-brainer if we all want to be on the same page, as Representative Olson points out. How can we get there? Give us what you need, because apparently our requests are falling on deaf ears, are falling short. Help us.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And most of my questions have been asked, and I think Representative Ugham presented those questions the best. But what really hit me today, I think all of us should really think about what Mr. Nobles said. We have a real issue here with an agency, MMB, not following the law. And this is something that we all have to really think about. What are we doing here as legislators? And he said it very eloquently that, you know, we've got the report, we got the results, and those results are not following the law. So as legislators, we really need to take a look at our own hearts and see what we expect when we sign our names to laws that we pass, and when we sit here in these committees and discuss these things. We have to be realizing that we're here, we're representing the people. If you take a look at the amount of money that was spent on these awards, achievement awards, $11 million were spent on achievement awards. And we don't have a way to account for that. But thank you for coming in, and I know you're in the hot seat. Mr. Nobles, thank you for your comments. It hits us where we need to be thinking. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and many of my questions and concerns have been raised as well, although I'd like to mention a few things. First of all, I think this is a fantastic program, this employee gain share program, and I'm looking forward to when it's implemented, and it hasn't been implemented. I'm looking forward to some significant savings and employees, you know, feeling terrific about having brought forward ideas that are going to limit potentially the size and scope of government, the cost of government, make things more efficient, and be rewarded for it. So, you know, I just think it's really, really important that we implement the law to the letter of the law. And I just want to say that while all of this conversation has been going on, I've been reviewing and have been very concerned and very upset about the letter that Commissioner Franz wrote, and it's in our booklets, two pages following page 14. And I'm concerned about it because Commissioner Franz references that he's disappointed, Mr. Nobles, by your erroneous legal conclusions and your advocacy of a risky and costly new program. And I wanted to ask you to give you an opportunity to correct the record. The letter starts out that he's, you know, challenging the inaccuracies in the erroneous legal conclusions in your report. And I know you saw that, wondering if after all of the time that you've had to complete the report, reflect on it, if there's anything in your report that you wish could have been restated or anything in need of clarification, but concerns me about these accusations.
Mr. Noble.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh and members, I was a bit taken aback, frankly, by the letter. I interact with Commissioner Franz a great deal. He and I think, have a very good and positive relationship. We certainly can, from time to time, have our differences. But I think, frankly, the law is clear. There's nothing in this report that I think is inaccurate or unfair, and I think that's been supported by this hearing, and frankly, even by the testimony of MMB. We allow commissioners to write their own letter and say what they want to say, and Commissioner Franz chose to say this. Unfortunately, he chose not to be here today to explain to you why he made these statements. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles and Madam Chair. I just want to have everyone reference the second paragraph when the commissioner stated that on numerous occasions he provided information to the legislature on the efficacy of gain-sharing programs, the significant problems with the implementation and underfunding, and concerns over sufficient internal controls to prevent fraud and employee conflict. And after having heard everything I did today, I'm really unclear about when all of that feedback would have come forth. And then furthermore, you know, I'm assuming potentially as a result of the 2011 legislation, I don't know that, but then his final remark in that paragraph was, I hope that the legislature will address the serious operational problems presented by the 2017 amendment to the statute with the lack of resources available to implement the program. And I already heard from the chair that this letter is dated January 22nd, so I already heard today that we have not received a roadmap of what implementing this program would look like. And so the challenge is clear, the law is clear, and I look forward to reviewing what that roadmap looks like and the timing and action to implement it, because I'm excited about this program, and it's a great program and will benefit the state of Minnesota. So thank you, Madam Chair.
I have one more person left on the list, and then we'll be done because we are at the time that we need to adjourn. But I just have a quick question for Mr. Nobles, Mr. Alder. Does this present any liability for the state that this program is not being implemented? Could there ever be a state employee that would say, I deserve to have this, but I was denied it because it has not been implemented by MMB?
That is a possibility, Madam Chair. As Mr. Alter said, we know of at least one employee who felt that they had at least the possibility of receiving a reward. But without the program, that possibility was denied. So I don't feel comfortable in offering you too definitive of a opinion on that. I think, frankly, the thing that concerns me more, and I won't take more time to reiterate it, but just as I said before, you passed a law. The executive branch constitutional responsibility is to implement it. That's the part that concerns me the most. I certainly would like to see state employees get rewarded for their good ideas and performance if it can be documented that they've created cost savings. But more importantly, I would just like to see the administration spend more time and effort in implementing what you've passed.
I'm Representative Nash. Last one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. Mr. Hallstrom, are you familiar with the program that Representative Kwan brought up earlier, the SAVI program?
I regret that I'm not sufficiently familiar with it to speak with any value.
Madam Chair.
Moment.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Nobles, are you familiar with the SAVI program?
Mr. Nobles.
Only by name we are.
Okay.
But I can guarantee you we will learn more.
Well, Madam Chair, and thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, is that the next special review you want us to?
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Nobles, I know you and I talk a lot about different things, but Representative Kwan, also in 2011, passed this into law. It's called the SAVI program. And it's not implemented, as far as I understand, and Representative Kwan, I think, pointed that out earlier. You know, so it goes back to the question of why are we not implementing laws, and my other question is what other laws haven't we decided to implement or obey? And I think that's a fairly pertinent question. So, and we may have to save that for another day since the clock is working against us.
Yes. And with that, members, we are adjourned.